You heard our choir sing Peter Mayer's song, Japanese Bowls. But in a collector's mind, all of these jagged lines make me more beautiful and worth a higher price. I'm like one of those Japanese bowls. I was made long ago. I have some cracks you can see. See how they shine of gold. He is describing the Japanese art of kintsugi, and it means golden repair. And it is the Japanese art of fixing broken pottery with lacquer resin, dusted or mixed with powdered gold or silver or platinum. As a philosophy, it speaks to the breakage and repair becoming part of the history of an object rather than something to disguise. Not only is there no attempt to hide the damage, but the repair is literally illuminated, a kind of physical expression of the spirit of Mushin. Mushin is often literally translated as no mind, but carries connotations of fully existing within the moment, of non-attachment, of equanimity among changing conditions, the chaos of existence over time to which all humans are susceptible could not be clearer than in the breaks, the knocks, and the shattering to which ceramic ware too often is subject. It really is a beautiful art form. In a time when it is often easier to throw something out than to repair it, it can seem strange to us. In general, as a society, we don't support repairing over replacing enough. And so to have the act of repairing something raised to an art form is really unusual. If you can look at the photo on the front of your order of service, you will see a piece of pottery done with kintsugi. Look at the play of light and dark. The gold just pops. No one of us is perfect. And our first principle, in effect, says that we do not need to be. Like the kintsugi bowls, those cracked pots, we are cracked too. Life shapes us and breaks us and heals us. There are scars and moles and limps and aches. We can choose to think of those things as making us less than. We can choose to think of those things as making us imperfect. But our first principle tells us that our bumps and bruises do not make us less human, but actually more beautiful. I believe that we Unitarian Universalists are an Easter people. And I do not mean that we are Christian. I mean that we are a people who believe in the goodness of this world. We know that there is badness and even evil in the world. But that is not what defines the world. We see wholeness as essential in creation. We believe in the goodness of creation, not the brokenness of creation. We believe in the inherent worth and dignity of each person and in the interconnected web of creation. In the face of social media, we still believe this. Because our faith is deep. Hosea Ballou, as you heard in our Time for All Ages, learned that as a child, and he is one of the great ancestors of our Universalism. Imagine if each of you really, really understood that you are each full of worth and dignity. That first principle sounds so sweet and kind, like something you might teach a group of kindergartners because it is so simple. But it is deceptive because it is life-changing. Valuing yourself, knowing that you are worthy, knowing that you have dignity, it changes you, and from there you can change the world. Brené Brown is a social scientist and researcher, and she's done a lot of work researching shame. In her work, she thought it was wise to research the opposite of shame, and she found a pretty simple truth. She talked to a number of people who one could describe as wholehearted, folks who were loving, generative, and who were able to make the risk to be intimate. And she found that people who have a strong sense of love and belonging believe that they are worthy of love and belonging. This is a profoundly simple truth. If you believe you are worthy of the gift of love and belonging, you will accept the gift of love and belonging. And you have to be offered the gift of love and belonging. Now, it is not uncommon for some of my Christian ministry colleagues to ask me why I no longer work in a Christian church and instead am passionately a UU minister. They know, and I know, that I still count myself as a Christian, and so they wonder why I don't work in a more traditional church. And I must admit, I can't always figure out why they stay where they are. Because we are an Easter people. For me, Easter is not some triumphalist event where death is vanquished. For me, that is an anxiety-based interpretation. Most humans are very anxious about death at some level. To interpret the meaning of the Easter story as we don't really die just doesn't do it for me. We UUs are an Easter people because we know what it means to be broken and to find new life within that brokenness. Sometimes we UUs sound like we don't believe anything at all, because we are open to a variety of beliefs and because we try to be kind and nice, and that means sometimes we don't do a good job of defining what we do believe because we don't want to get in an argument with anybody. Sometimes the deed of kindness outweighs the value of creed. And I would really rather have it that way, but I still think that we need to define ourselves proactively. So what do we believe? We believe that first you leap and then you grow wings. We believe that there is an in-between. When there is an in-between, there is a chance to build bridges. We believe that by building bridges, we can be the people who can affect change. We believe we are the bridge builders. We believe that wholeness is possible when you celebrate the brokenness, when you learn to love it, and don't rush for clearness too soon. When we love ourselves the way we are, when we love others the way they are, then we create safe, warm spaces where the messy work of transformation can happen. Here is one message of Easter. Each of us is never not broken, and we are also whole. Last week, I preached about how if one reaches a state of burnout, a state when your life falls apart, there is a possibility of remaking your life, a chance of rebirth. And that is Easter. We are never not broken, and we are never not whole. Christians say that God's love is so strong, so powerful that we are saved. We Unitarian Universalists say that the love in this world is so strong, so present, that we are always being moved toward new life. Our Universalist heritage tells us that the love of God or the love in this world is so strong that brokenness does not define us. We are never not broken, and we are whole. It is important to understand that Jesus was not crucified for you or me. He was crucified by the government of Rome for being the head of a movement that wanted freedom for the Jews and which believed in love, equality, and peace, to name a few. One of the ways the early Christians were also an Easter people is they did not let Jesus' death end their movement. At the time of Jesus' death, Jerusalem was occupied by Rome. This was no small thing, and that occupation did not end on that first Easter morning. The whole world was not literally made new in one fell swoop. In fact, 40 years after the murder of Jesus, the temple in Jerusalem would be destroyed by the Romans. When that first Easter morning happened, the followers of Jesus were more broken than they had been at the beginning of the week. Easter was not and is not some kind of magic eraser that makes everything perfect. I read an interview recently with Reverend Serene Jones, who's the president of Union Theological Seminary. She says in it, "For me, the cross is an enactment of our human hatred, but what happens on Easter is the triumph of love in the midst of suffering. Isn't that reason for hope? For me, the message of Easter is that love is stronger than life or death." That's a much more awesome claim than they put Jesus in the tomb and 3 days later he wasn't there. She goes on to say, "Christianity is at something of a turning point, but I think that this questioning and this reaching is even bigger than Christianity. It reaches into many religious traditions. This wrestling with climate change and wrestling with the levels of violence in our world and wrestling with authoritarianism and the intractable character of gender oppression, it's forcing communities of all religions to say, something's horribly wrong here. It's a spiritual crisis. Something was struggling to be born that first Easter. It burst forth in ways that changed the world forever. Today, I feel the spiritual ground around us shaking again. The structures of religion, as we know, have come up bankrupt and are collapsing. What will emerge is her question. What will emerge? That is for our children and our children's children to envision and build." I like her words very much because I think they do describe this time we're in. We all know some big, huge change is afoot. Now, we cannot know what was in the minds of the followers of Jesus when he was killed. We can imagine that they were deeply grieved, and I could imagine quite scared. Jesus was killed by the state of Rome for his crimes against their government. He was a rebel, and I don't mean a rebel who disagreed with people over the dinner table. He wanted to overturn the authority of the Roman government. In the Gospel of Mark, most translations tell the story that he was crucified between two bandits. But the Greek word that is translated as bandit is laistes. And according to a Greek English lexicon, laistes has two meanings, and the first is robber or bandit, but the second usage is a revolutionary, an insurrectionist, a guerrilla fighter. I suspect that this is the more accurate translation, at least for our time. Jesus was leading a movement aimed at overthrowing the Roman-controlled Jewish leadership, and Rome killed him for it. His followers had to be beyond broken on that Easter morning. And yet the power of Easter is that that is not the end of the story. They did not give up, move home, and pretend they never knew him. They carried on in a magnificent way, and maybe different than we think. Rita Nakashami Brock and Reverend Rebecca Ann Parker wrote a book a while ago called Saving Paradise. In that book, they write about telling the truth about Jesus' crucifixion has abiding importance. To break the silence whenever violence is used to shame, instill fear, fragment human community, or suppress those who advocate for justice is life-giving. Just as Jesus in John's gospel stood before Pilate and said, "You have no power over me," the passion narratives defied the power of crucifixion to silence Jesus' movement. In doing so, they placed before his movement the choice to tell the truth and live by ethical grace. They said life is found in surviving the worst a community can imagine, in lamenting the consequences of imperialism, and in holding fast to the core goodness of this world, blessed by divine justice and abundant life. In this book, the authors show that in the very early Christian church, before about 1100 CE, the depictions of Jesus in paintings and artwork were not on the cross, but rather Jesus in paradise, and not in a heavenly paradise, but one here on earth. During their first millennium, Christians filled their sanctuaries with images of Christ as a living presence in a vibrant world. He appears as a shepherd, a teacher, a healer, an enthroned God. He is an infant, a youth, and a bearded elder, but he is never dead. When he appears with the cross, he stands in front of it, serene and resurrected, the world around him ablaze with beauty. These are the images of paradise, paradise in this world, permeated and blessed by the presence of God. The power of love will transform this world. We are broken, and the world is broken, and even that brokenness cannot stop love. That is the message of Easter. We are never not broken, and we are never not whole. That is the saving message of Easter for all people. In a world without end, may this be so. Thank you.